The Story of Balaam. Hi, this is Zdravko Stefanovic from Walla Walla University School of Theology. Welcome to Good Word, our weekly radio program that focuses on biblical topics and discussions. Today we continue our study of selected passages from the book of Numbers. And I'm grateful to the two guests that I have here with me, Paul Dibdahl. Dr. Paul Dibdahl is professor of religion here at Walla Walla University, and Dr. Kyle Craig, he teaches chemistry here at the university. Gentlemen, again, welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Here we come to that fascinating story, well known to many people, readers of the Bible, and even those who have not read the Bible in its entirety. But I have a friend who likes to say, who likes to make the following statement, and that is that the most familiar a passage from the Bible, the more likely that we may miss its main point. Mm-hmm. So, are there things that we have learned now in rereading this story? Let's begin with a simple question. What do we know, first of all, from the Bible, and then maybe outside of the Bible, about Balaam? Who was Balaam?
See, now it's a little difficult to answer because you've just said maybe we have missed the most important things. But wasn't Balaam non-Israelite, well-known apparently in the ancient world? My understanding is that we even have records in at least one extra biblical source outside of the Bible that contains a prophecy of Balaam.
Somewhat later time, somewhere maybe the 7th, the 8th century, Der Allah inscription from Jordan talks about the reputation that this man had.
So widely recognized, widely known as a spokesperson for the gods, maybe we should say, for divine beings. And not spoken highly of elsewhere in Scripture as a kind of false prophet who was motivated by greed.
Mm-hmm. Kyle, anything to add?
I seem to remember that he didn't exactly die the most noble of deaths, but I don't remember exactly what it was at this point.
I'm glad that you're raising that, and we could mention that at the end as well, because it's not a part of this story on which we are focusing, but it's found a little later in the book and in the Bible, but that will be important to emphasize as well. Thank you. Yes. Now, Balak, with a K at the end, which stands for king, king of Moab, he's concerned, together with some other surrounding people, he's concerned about the Israelite marching towards the land of Canaan, and he hires Balaam to come. He wants him to come and pronounce a curse on the people of Israel so that it would be easier for Balak and his allies to defeat the nation of Israel. And as Balak's delegation arrives in the town of Balaam, they find him, they talk to him. First of all, God tells Balaam, go with these people. But then later on, in the story, in verse 32, we have the text in front of us, and our readers can look it up, Numbers 22, 26 through 31. God says, or God's emissary says, I have come here to oppose you because your journey is not according to my plan. So what do we make of this? Was God happy with Balaam's going into Palestine, east of Jordan, into the land of Moab, or was he opposed to it? What's going on here?
And just kind of to back up just a slight bit, it sounds like Balak is invoking a war of the gods, because he probably, or he has heard of all the things that God has done for Israel, and he's wanting to counteract that. And it sounds like with the phrase that you mentioned, I have come here to oppose you, that also sort of plays into, at least in my mind, that there's a war of the gods going on right now.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
you asked about a contradiction, and you mentioned God's words to Balaam, go with them. The next phrase, though, I think is important. The Lord said, go with them and do only what I tell you. Mm-hmm. And that's repeated again in verse 35. Mm-hmm. So apparently Balaam was going, and it wasn't so much the going that was the problem, but his intention must have been to do something other than what God was going to be instructing him to
now,
do.
I appreciate that you are sharing that with us here. Because it's very helpful to know that it's not just Balaam's going, but what's behind. Because Balaam's first reaction to this was, as he checks with God and he learns once again who the Israelites are, that it is there are people impossible to curse. Balaam tells the officers, I cannot go. My God does not allow me to go. He did not use the possessive my. We should say, God does not allow me to go. And as they go back and bring even greater gifts, you know, he tells them, but wait a minute. Maybe God will speak one more time. In other words, what is he saying?
Every man has a price.
Yeah, maybe God will change his mind when he hears what's coming, you know, all the gifts that are here and so on. Well, we more or less know the rest of the story. The kind of transportation that Balaam used was a simple donkey. That would be like our Chevy, small car from going from here to Pendleton, and you know, short distances. Camel would be Cadillac for longer distances. But something interesting happens, and that is that donkey talks to Balaam. And my question here is the talking donkey the most surprising element in the story? That's how the story is remembered, but is that really the most surprising element?
That he talked back is more surprising to me.
I fully agree with you. Yeah. And he talked in the way that he pretended not to be surprised at all that an animal could talk. Mm-hmm. He didn't find it unusual at all. He began arguing with his own animal.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of lesson do we find behind this element in the story?
When you're so... determined to do something, even the most bizarrest of circumstances aren't going to stop you. Because donkeys don't talk. None that I've heard, at least. And I consider myself to be a normal human being and well-traveled. But, you know, so, yeah, that he would talk back and that he would... Verse 29, you have made a fool of me. No, I think he's made a fool of himself for talking back to a donkey.
Yeah. And I think it seems to me that several times in the Bible, we have a kind of a comparison which is drawn between an animal and a human. And the animals, you know, even the animals, you know, can figure it out and know. But you're
And
this
ox.
Is another one of those cases where the animal, the donkey, can see.
Mm-hmm.
And this man who is supposed to be a seer, a prophet, is blind to what's going on. So that kind of contrast, I think, is...
And he boasted about it. He said, these are the words of the man. Even when he falls, his eyes are still open. And here he was so blinded that an animal could see something that he couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
The Bible calls it the wages of sin. It seems that Balaam was just blinded, you know, after this gift.
And I don't know about in those days with different animals, but, you know, in common parlance today, if you, you know, refer to somebody as a donkey or some other similar word to it, that's, you know, donkeys are not considered to be particularly bright, particularly, you know,
intelligent
sort of a beast. And so it's like...
Beast of burden.
Here's one of the stupidest creatures, at least, you know, in our culture nowadays, she's one of the stupidest creatures out there, and it's talking to you, and you're talking back to it. And
losing the argument.
Yes, losing the argument soundly.
Exactly. Now let's look at some of the pronouncements, and here is one in Numbers 23. Balaam, inspired by God, said, God is not a man, meaning a human being, that he should lie, nor a son of man that he should change his mind. Does he speak and then not act? Does he promise and not fulfill? I have received the command to bless. He has blessed. I cannot change it. And now let's listen to these words. No misfortune is seen in Jacob, no misery observed in Israel. The Lord, their God, is with them. The shout of the king is among them.
Mm.
Not only that these words are surprising, but they are found in the book of Numbers, in the middle of the book that describes the people of Israel in such a miserable way. And here it says, no misfortune is seen in Jacob, no misery. God sees no fault with his people. Can we make any sense of these words?
The eyes of a parent looking at their child and seeing the good. I think we can call it love, I suppose. Potential. I don't know what else to make of it. It's beautiful.
It is. But is it truthful? Some have suggested that maybe an answer to this question comes from the words in verse 21. Why is it that God looked at his people differently? The Lord their God is with them. What was in the midst of the Israelite camp?
Yeah.
It was the Lord's abiding presence. And that's what Balaam saw. A place not only that marked the presence of God on earth, but the place to which every Israelite who sinned could go and ask for forgiveness from sins. And once that is accomplished, God's people, they become blameless. Now, the New Testament version of this that I'm sure we have heard many times is 1 Corinthians. We know, we have heard a lot about the city of Corinth, all the problems in the church there, and yet the Apostle Paul begins the letter by saying, to the saints. Who were called by God to the highest calling. And then Paul continues and so on. Well, this is the Old Testament version of that truth. That God looks at his people in a different way. Why? Because they are the ones who have pledged to surrender their hearts to him. And in the case of the ancient Israelites, it was the sanctuary in the midst of God's people that provided God's abiding presence and an opportunity for every repentant sinner to be forgiven by God. Does this make sense? Maybe another question would be, why is it that Balaam could not curse Israel?
Because they were blessed by God, it seems to me.
It almost sounds like God wouldn't let him curse. Like he would, he opened his mouth thinking that he was going to say this, but he ended up saying something totally different. Which, if that is really what happened, I'd say that's probably an equally large as miracle as having your donkey talk to you.
I agree with you. And I will also remember Moses who would say in this instance, God, you cannot curse yourself. You are present in the midst of your people. I would like to conclude our study today by saying God's promises are worthy of our trust. Thank you, gentlemen, Dr. Paul Dibdahl and Dr. Kyle Craig, for your contribution to our discussion today. And also I'm thankful to Susan Michael, our radio technician. And I would like to invite our listeners next week to explore with us a few more passages from the Book of Numbers. For Good Word, I'm Zdravko Stefanovic.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.